This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello. Welcome back to another reading of Women's Health Magazine. I'm Susie Bartlett. So happy to have you here. We've been talking about women with health challenges, and the next one is Fiona Hutchins, 21. She's a dancer with the Colorado Ballet and Diablo Ballet. She says, dealing with hearing loss was an exercise in patience and endurance. In seventh grade, I began having trouble with my hearing, so much so that I had to wear hearing aids. When I wasn't sitting close to my teachers, it was challenging to hear them. And my friends were frustrated with me because I'd have to say, "What?" so many times. Over the next 2 years, my hearing loss got even worse, with my left ear declining faster than my right. While I knew something was wrong, the confirmation from a specialist that I was in fact losing my hearing was devastating. I worried that I wouldn't be able to hear and enjoy music in the same way. I was also afraid that my ballet dancing, which I'd been doing since I could walk, would suffer. My rapid hearing loss qualified me for a cochlear implant, and in 2019, I had the surgery. I was nervous. It was going to be a big change from hearing aids. When my cochlear was activated, about a month after surgery, I couldn't hear anything for a good 10 minutes. Then it sounded like bubbles. Finally, I started to hear sounds, but everything was very high-pitched, which was different from the lower pitch range I was used to with my hearing aids. It was an exercise in patience and endurance. It would take another 2 months of wearing the cochlear every day for things to sound normal to me. But the reward, a big boost in my hearing, was worth it. My cochlear implant had made me more confident. I feel less shy talking to people and more comfortable in social settings. It's helped me improve as a dancer as well. I used to have to watch other people to see when they were doing a step to compensate for not hearing the music, but now I am mostly able to determine musical cues myself. That doesn't mean there haven't been learning moments. Initially, I had to make sure the outer magnetic portion of my sound processor stayed in place. I found it would fly off while I was performing pirouettes, which was really embarrassing. So I now secure it by taping it to my head with KT tape. And sometimes delicate music is hard for me to decipher and there's no clear rhythm. In this case, I look out for a couple of notes that I recognize as the music plays and count in my head for guidance. One of the biggest lessons this has taught me is how to advocate for myself. I used to be afraid to ask others to accommodate me. I've realized there's nothing wrong with asking for what you need. If I need the music louder, then I need the music louder. That shouldn't bother anyone. I want people to know that no matter your disability, it doesn't have to stop you from doing anything you want. If it doesn't frighten you, then you aren't really challenging yourself. My sister, who is a year older than me, was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when she was 8 years old. So when I started showing signs at 14, I knew exactly what it was. I'd essentially already lived with the disease for 7 years. As a very active kid, I never let having type 1 diabetes, which prevents the pancreas from making insulin, deter me from anything. That included running, which I began in my youth but really got into in the 90s, working my way up from a 4-miler to the marathon. Back then, I'd carry my blood sugar meter with me. I'd stop mid-race to test myself, dropping my blood on the meter, which would take about 3 minutes. When I got the reading, I'd adjust. My husband would also meet me on different parts of the course with my insulin injections, just in case my blood sugar ran high. I also always carried some kind of sweets, typically Swedish fish or Skittles with me, which I still do now because you never know with diabetes. You don't know if your stress level is going to tank you or if you're coming down with a slight cold that will affect your blood sugar. Honestly, it used to be a pain to control my blood sugar while running. And this is by Linda Carter. She's 61. She's an author, ultra runner, and the first woman to complete the World Marathon Challenge, which are 7 marathons on 7 continents in 7 days, 3 times. She says, "These days the process is much simpler. I have a continuous glucose monitor on the back of my arm that checks my blood sugar and sends information to my insulin pump, which is the size of an old school pager. I hook it on my belt loop. This pump then feeds me insulin instead of my needing to do daily shots. When I'm running, my blood sugar goes up within the first 2 miles because of the exertion. But during the next few miles, it goes down. My insulin pump, in combination with my continuous glucose monitor, accounts for this, adjusting every 5 minutes. I've had type 1 diabetes for 47 years, and the way this pump works makes it almost feel like being a non-diabetic again, which is, of course, everything if it works the way it's supposed to. That's why it's all about planning for the worst so you don't have to worry if something were to happen. When your blood sugar drops, it's like hitting a wall. But worse, my vision gets blurry and dark, and I can't walk in a straight line. I approach every race with that preparation, including my most recent World Marathon Challenge, which is competing 7 marathons on 7 continents in 7 days. Wow. So while most people are training their body to learn to run on tired legs and trying out new running clothes, I also have to test out what I'm eating with the pump adjustments I have to make. This recent challenge required me to eat more, so I had to figure out what I could eat to keep my blood sugar and energy levels up, while taking into consideration muscle recovery. I worked with a nutritionist and a trainer, and they came up with this drink mix that was basically carbs and protein. I would drink it 30 minutes after my run. On race day, I also have to make sure that my insulin pump has fresh AA battery because you don't want that going dead during the race. I make sure I change my insulin the day before the race because sometimes the cannula hits the scar tissues and the pump doesn't give you enough and your blood sugar runs high. And I have to worry about my pump withstanding the various temperatures on each continent. Needless to say, there's a lot to do that the average runner doesn't even have to think about. For me, though, it's all about the challenge. If it doesn't frighten you, then you aren't really challenging yourself. And I've always liked to challenge myself. Next, we'll hear from Diamond Shields, 29 years old. She's a WNBA champion, former All-Star, and a guard on the Dallas Wings. She says, "Anytime you get to go out and play the game, you have to appreciate that. Before a collision with the player while playing overseas in Italy in December 2019, I've never had a single back issue. But on the next play, as I landed on the court after jumping for a rebound, I felt a jolt of electricity from the ground up my back. I didn't think much of it, but in the following days, it was hard to move, lift my legs, or play basketball. After an agonizing week, I got an MRI. I was floored when I was told that I had a tumor on my spine, a condition usually found in men over 40, and that I needed surgery immediately as the tumor could cause severe nerve damage or even paralysis. Removing the tumor, though, could also potentially lead to paralysis. Either way, there was a possibility I would never walk or play basketball again. Coming out of the 3-hour turned 9-hour surgery in January 2020, I felt as if I were in the scene from Kill Bill in which Uma Thurman is trying to will herself to wiggle her big toe. I couldn't feel my feet after surgery, and when the sensation came back, they were sensitive. I'd have 2-hour massages each day with different items, starting with a feather, which I could barely tolerate. I couldn't wear sneakers. I could not walk. I was also having daily full body tremors that lasted from 2 to 9 hours and were extremely painful. I'd beg the nurses to make it stop, but no meds could calm them down. I struggled mentally, coming to grips with the possibility of my entire livelihood changing. To make matters worse, COVID hit 2 months after my surgery, and I was no longer able to go to physical therapy or see my doctors. I left Chicago for Atlanta to quarantine with my family. I cried a lot and spent most of the days on the couch. I physically couldn't pull myself off of it. I felt as if I was getting beat down every day. Even though I was making progress, I never gave myself credit. Yes, I could rub my foot with a rag now, but I needed to be able to run and jump and move in a way that was so far from where I was at. I had so much more ground to cover that I never celebrated the little victories. Being away from my team was almost as tough as my physical struggles. So I decided to go to the WNBA bubble in Florida, knowing that I didn't have much to offer as an athlete, but just to be around my friends. It was important to spend time with my Chicago Sky teammates. They helped me through a tough chapter. I fought to get back out on court, working at it every single day. So when we won the WNBA Finals in 2021, and I was out there playing, I was overcome with emotion. Fast forward to now, 4 years post-surgery, and I finally feel normal. Actually, I feel stronger. My tremors are gone, and I've realized how precious life and the game of basketball are. Anytime you get to go out and play the game, you have to appreciate that. I have big goals now. I want to get back to having fun playing basketball. I also want to go to the Paris Olympics. I've worked to be at a point where I feel I deserve that opportunity, and I will hustle for it. Next, we have Devon Yanko, 41 years old. She's an ultra runner, a run coach, Lululemon ambassador, and a member of the Further team. She says ultra running feels like the vacation from the hard stuff. In the summer of 2022, I plan to do 5 100-mile races in 5 months to celebrate my 40th birthday. In mid-April, I completed the first in this series, the Umstead 100, running my fastest 100-miler time. I felt amazing. By June, when I was slated to run the Kettle Moraine 100, I started having persistent symptoms, fatigue, joint pain, and Raynaud's, a condition where some of the areas of the body feel numb and cool in certain circumstances. I couldn't mentally force myself through this race. I didn't even make it past mile 7. I knew something was wrong. In October, I saw a rheumatologist who confirmed that I had lupus as well as another autoimmune disorder, antiphospholid syndrome, a blood clot disorder, which co-occurs with lupus. Honestly, it wasn't surprising since I was a walking list of lupus symptoms. When you've had highs and lows in your health, I also have Hashimoto's disease and a Crohn's colitis spectrum issue, and have been told so many times nothing is wrong, getting an answer feels like a reason to celebrate. But just because I had an answer didn't mean I had a solution. Everybody's lupus journey is different. That's the hardest part. No one can tell you what your body is going to react to. Sometimes it feels as if I have to get a PhD in rheumatology to help myself. But I also realized that if I waited until I woke up in the morning feeling good before I went on a run, I'd probably never run again. Continuing to move for health is more important. If I can take away the judgment of wishing I was faster and still get joy out of it, that's a win. While I haven't had the easiest life, ultra running still feels like a vacation from the hard stuff. My mantra at the Javelina Jundred 100 miler last year, 3 weeks after my diagnosis, was, "This is not hard. Lupus is hard." There are some people who have lupus and can't even get out of bed. So if I'm in a position of being able to run and it's a 100 miler, I don't really even need to tap into my mental stores. I'm going to save that for when the disease is actually tough. That's not to say I don't have bad days. I have day-to-day variability as well as flares, which is when your symptoms get so bad they feel, at least for me, like having COVID, the flu, and mono at once. In these moments, I don't want to feel sick. I don't want to feel this way. But I try not to go down a rabbit hole. I ask myself what I need right now to make myself feel better. Sometimes that means crying. Other times, it's running hard. I've had runners reach out to me for advice and resources. Even people who don't have lupus, like my further teammate, Rico, are extremely supportive. She'll write my name on her hand for runs and say, "This run is for Devin." So when I'm having a tough day, I pull from the strength of others and from my teammates who persevere in the face of their own unique obstacles. My goodness, these women are so inspiring. Next, digging deep. Oh, I'm sorry, we just read about that. Let's go to the next article, which is Resilience Recharge. The obstacles and symptoms that creep up while you're training for an event don't have to throw you off your game. Practice these mental health tactics recommended by Katie Willard-Virent, who specializes in counseling patients with chronic illness, so you can tap into what works for you. Number one, transition from goal to process orientation. Sure, winning medals and setting PRs are worth shooting for, but remember how the activity itself is enjoyable and what about it makes you happy regardless of performance outcomes. Put it into practice. While training, pay attention to how your body feels in the moment. For example, if you're a swimmer, maybe you remember being a kid and experiencing joy in the water. Tell yourself statements like, "I love moving my body like this," and hold on to those in-the-moment emotions as the reward. Two, reframe rest. FYI, rest is medicinal and also productive. We are so opposed to rest in this culture, and that mindset does us no favors. This is the key on those days when your body is dragging or symptoms flare up beyond your control. Put it into practice. Before you set out for a training session, ask yourself, what does my body want from me? Does it want gentle movement? Does it want stasis? Listen to what your body tells you and try to honor that and not always push through. Three, dig out of disappointment. It's natural to be disappointed at times and to think, this is not what I want. It counts as real grief, but we run into trouble when we get stuck there. Put it into practice. After you allow yourself to feel, journal, or cry about it, shift your perspective by imagining a camera panning out. When you first experience disappointment, the camera is close and that's all you can see. When you pan out, it allows you to view other positive things like good relationships in your life, feeling physically better again, or something else you appreciate. And the negative emotion naturally diminishes. Well, I agree with that. I have a post-it by my mirror in the morning and it says, choose gratitude. So for me, I am constantly looking for things in my day to be grateful for. It's a game changer. Why don't you try it? Number four, make your own mantras. Negative chatter can overwhelm, so be proactive. Using affirming self-talk to whisper or shout amid struggles. Take time and find out what really resonates with you and your personality in tough times. Put it into practice. If you're extroverted, find a friend or family member and talk through what they would tell you for encouragement. Or just imagine what you would say to a loved one, a beloved child, a friend, or spouse going through a difficult time. Then practice the mantras so they're automatic. Number five, break for a body scan. Pain tends to cause muscles to tense up during training as well as off times. as the body braces for danger. You may not notice when it happens or even realize you can reverse it. Put it into practice. Multiple times throughout the day, mentally travel down your body from head to toe, asking yourself, how am I holding tension? Where am I holding it? Then intentionally relax those muscles and clenched areas. This lets your nervous system know that it's okay and that you're safe. I love that. All right, next we are moving on to food. This is called lettuce level up. Salad is a staple yet deserves more glory than it often gets. We gussied up all kinds of greens for tastier plates that'll soon be in your meal rotation. Goodbye, basic bowls. The first one is a roasted veg salad. It takes 35 minutes and it serves four. You will need 1 pound of small Brussels sprouts, trimmed and halved, 3 tablespoons of olive oil, divided, 1/4 teaspoon of hot paprika, kosher salt, and pepper, 2 medium sweet potatoes cut lengthwise into 1-inch wedges, then halved crosswise if the potatoes are long, cut them into thirds, 1 tablespoon of pure maple syrup, 1 teaspoon of sriracha, 1/4 cup of tahini, 3 tablespoons of fresh lemon juice, 1 5-ounce container of baby spinach and arugula mix, 1.5 cups of cooked lentils, 2 ounces of goat cheese crumbled, which is about 1/3 cup, 2 tablespoons of sunflower seeds that are toasted, and 2 tablespoons of pepitas toasted, which are pumpkin seeds. Heat oven to 425 degrees. On a large rimmed sheet, toss your Brussels sprouts with 1 tablespoon oil, hot paprika, and 1/4 teaspoon each of salt and pepper, and arrange cut sides down. On another rimmed baking sheet, toss sweet potatoes with 1 tablespoon of oil and 1/4 teaspoon each of salt and pepper, and spread these in an even layer. Roast both baking sheets until Brussels sprouts are golden brown and tender, about 15 minutes. Remove Brussels sprouts from the oven and toss sweet potatoes and continue roasting until tender, 8 to 12 minutes more. Meanwhile, in a small bowl, stir together maple syrup and sriracha, and in a medium bowl, whisk together the tahini, the 2 tablespoons of lemon juice, 2 tablespoons of water, and 1/4 teaspoon salt until smooth. If needed, whisk in more water, 1/2 teaspoon at a time, to reach drizzling consistency. While Brussels sprouts are hot, drizzle with maple sriracha mixture and toss to coat. In a large bowl, toss greens with remaining 1 tablespoon each of oil and lemon juice. So to serve, top your greens with Brussels sprouts, sweet potatoes, lentils, goat cheese, and toasted seeds. Drizzle with tahini dressing. Wow, that sounds really amazing. No meat for you? Bring these proteiny power players to the party. So if you love legumes, try lentils, chickpeas, black beans, and cannellini. For scoop stars, you can try hummus, guacamole, and cottage cheese. And the stand-ins are tofu, seitan, tempeh, and faux meats. All right, how to make a stellar salad. Pick a few from each category to really satisfy your taste buds. So from the greens, you can pick little gem and green leaf to provide a soft landing. Romaine offers a crunch. You can also use spinach, arugula, and herbs to bring a mouthful of mmm. And if you like a more bitter salad, you consider complexity with frisée, radicchio, and endive. For toppings, if you want texture, mix creamy and crunchy, cooked and raw elements. For flavor, balance tang or bitterness with sweetness. Add pops of salt and sugar or fresh fruit. For shape, bite sizes best, or keep everything larger for a knife and fork vibe. The dressing. For a fat, stick to an oil that won't overpower, like mild olive, avocado, or canola. For acid, use a citrus or mustard or straight up vinegar and add a non-negotiable punch. Seasonings, salt is a must, but a sprinkle of spices or a drizzle of maple syrup can really bring it home. The bonus, if you like cheese, good quality hunks can simultaneously add texture, salt, and tang. For nuts and seeds, those are necessary for crunch, but they also add a richness that keeps you full. If you like croutons, get creative. Try crushed chips, dry roasted edamame, etc. The next recipe is a steak burrito bowl salad. Takes 30 minutes to prepare and it serves four. You will need one 15-ounce can of black beans, rinsed and patted dry, 3.5 tablespoons of olive oil divided, one teaspoon of tajin, I'm not sure what that is, plus more for sprinkling, 1 1-pound sirloin steak, 1.5 inches thick, trimmed with kosher salt and pepper, 2 cups of cilantro chopped, 1 small shallot roughly chopped, 1/2 jalapeno seeded and roughly chopped, 1/4 cup of fresh orange juice, 2 tablespoons of fresh lime juice, 2 tablespoons of Greek yogurt, 2 cups of cooked short grain brown rice, 1/4 of a small head of red cabbage, cored and thinly sliced. Heat your oven to 425 degrees. Add your black beans to a rimmed baking sheet and toss with 1/2 tablespoon of olive oil and tajin. Roast until the beans are dry, split, and crispy, 18 to 20 minutes. Meanwhile, heat 1 tablespoon of oil in a large cast iron skillet on medium high. Pat your steak completely dry and season with 1/2 teaspoon each of salt and pepper. Cook to desired doneness, 5 to 6 minutes per side for medium rare, and transfer to cutting board and let rest at least 5 minutes before slicing. Meanwhile, in a blender, combine cilantro, shallot, jalapeno, orange and lime juices, yogurt, and remaining 2 tablespoons of olive oil. Puree on high until homogeneous but still bright green for about 30 seconds. Divide rice among your bowls, top with cabbage and roasted black beans, add sliced steak and drizzle with green sauce, and sprinkle with more tajin if desired. Well, my friends, we've reached the end of our time together. Hope you enjoyed this issue of Women's Health Magazine. I'm Susie Bartlett, wishing you the best day ever. Until next time, bye-bye.